Welcome to Tantra Talks. This podcast is brought to you by Tantra Labs and hosted by Tantra's CTO, Russell LaCour, and creative director, Brecky Von Bitcoin. Please note, all opinions expressed by Brecky, Russell, or their guests on this podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Tantra Labs, Inc. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Brecky, Russell, or their guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of their opinions. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Previously only open to accredited investors, Tantra Labs will soon be open to the public, offering 12% interest on your Bitcoin. That's higher than our competitors and much higher than your bank. To learn more, visit tantralabs.io. All right, now back to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us today. I'm here with my co-founder Kagan, who heads up the most boring part of Tantra Labs, which is making sure that money comes in and out safely. Most important, I should say first, but also probably the most boring. And we're here today to talk about Ethereum. I think Kagan's actually the perfect person to talk with about this, because Kagan, you were a ETH whale yourself at one point, weren't you?
I was. I was in the DAO fiasco as well back in 2015. I like to sometimes go look at my old wallets just to see the transactions. Even at that point, I had no idea what I was doing. I remember trying to swap Bitcoin for Ethereum and using the Mist wallet. It was gibberish, but I still made it happen. And yeah, Ethereum's come a long way.
Yeah, it's come a long way in transaction fees too, don't you think? I think we're paying $10 to do anything on Ethereum nowadays. I was just having a conversation with a very smart man by the name of Matt Kay, who runs Blockhead Capital, and he was talking about how bullish that is for Ethereum. The fact that someone's willing to pay $3 to send money or pay $10 to do a transaction means that something is happening somewhere that creates more value than that, which I think is an amazing way to look at it. It just shows like there's a ton of value being created on that network right now. Is there anything in particular you're watching on Ethereum and like a part of?
Well, just to comment on that, it's interesting. I think the stat is Ethereum is producing about 3 times the amount of fees in the past couple of months as Bitcoin. And it's really easy to value, or it's easier to value things when you can see the utility. And I think that's what Matt Kay is probably referring to, is that transaction fees equal utility, where you don't have to convince someone that, you know, this holding this asset is the future of digital gold, but rather that people are going to be using this and going to continue to be using this. So it's a different value proposition. Yeah. And I think it's great. I mean, I think that's what makes Ethereum interesting to hold as an asset and to be a part of.
Absolutely. And it's one of the reasons that we decided to offer Ethereum in the Tantra Labs app, which is why I wanted to talk about it today and kind of use this podcast as the announcement to the world that not only are we offering 12% interest on Bitcoin, but we're also going to be offering 12% interest on Ethereum. And one of the reasons why we try to be agnostic, I think, in the currencies, but we've always watched Ethereum. We've always believed in Ethereum. We've always seen Ethereum as a, like, I think people talk about Litecoin, like it's a testing ground for Bitcoin. But in my opinion, I think a lot of the things happening with Ethereum and DeFi, it's a testing ground for what digital money can do. Like, when we can program money, what can we do with that money? And right now, all the, you know, magical kind of silly meme-based currencies created on Ethereum right now are, honestly, they're really powerful. Like, ultimately, everything that we're doing, even the US dollar, it's a Ponzi scheme, right? So the more people that are in it, the more money that it's worth. Same thing with Bitcoin, same thing with Ethereum. The more people that get in, the more people that put money on it, the more that value happens. And so right now we're just at a point in time where we need to show that it's valuable and that there's a reason for you to own it or want to have it or be a part of it. And I think Ethereum over the last 4 years has done a damn good job at that, between the ICOs losing everybody's money and the latest DeFi craze making everybody rich, right? Everybody's getting rich right now, right?
Absolutely. And I think to comment on that, as a firm, ultimately, in order for us to successfully create alpha, we have to have a significant amount of liquidity. So essentially that just means a market where counterparties can come and we can basically exchange different trades with them. And so it's not, we are agnostic, but we will evaluate these things as they grow and as they become liquid to the point where we can provide a service to people that want to participate. And like you said, it's the future of money. And I think what we're seeing is just the most raw form of experimentation in the most rapid period of time that I've ever seen. I cannot keep up. Don't tell anyone, but I'm on Twitter, you know, maybe 20% of the day. There's new content flowing through that frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's hard to sift through, you know, and I think one of the reasons that as a firm, we offer not only the ability for you to park your Bitcoin, but now your Ethereum. And I'm not trying to shill Tantra, but like, this is the truth. It's like, there's so much shit out there that all that stuff, you know, the 20% of your day that you spend on Twitter, probably 99% of the stuff that you see is going to lose you money. It's going to lose Bitcoin. It's going to lose Ethereum. It's going to end up with a smart contract bug or somebody, you know, stealing your money and pulling the rug. And so at least for me as someone who doesn't have 20% of my day to spend researching the next sushi swap or the next big thing, the next Bitcoin, quote unquote, like I would much rather put my money with a systematic approach like our algorithms than try to find the next hot thing that I can potentially make money on. Right. I think that's why I became an algorithmic developer, because the amount of resources required from yourself and like you as a human being to actually discover something that may or may not even be profitable for you is just absurd. Like, I would rather live my life and let the machine do the work for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. There's a lot of, like I said, experimentations going on, and things are not going to be consistent or not going to be reliable, but trading and looking at different arbitrage opportunities, those things have been time tested and been taken advantage, or not taken advantage of, but people have been trading for millennia.
Well, I think taking advantage is the right word. It's called like executing on inefficiencies, right? So it's, you find an inefficiency in a market, like an arbitrage opportunity or the under or overvaluing of an asset based on, you know, historical information or fundamental information, and you use it to your advantage. It's the same thing as like buying Ethereum early, right? Like you know, you say you didn't understand it, but I think maybe when you saw Ethereum for the first time, you were in awe of programmable digital money, and that's why you bought it. And so that was your alpha. Would you agree?
It was, I mean, back then it was a little bit more, it was a lot more generic pitch, actually. Ethereum was the future of everything. Any type of governance, any type of company, any type of service. And that's where I actually got sucked into machine learning, is because my first foray into Ethereum was I wanted to build a decentralized machine learning based money management solution. And I guess that is a little bit more like programmable money, but I mean, we were trying to build the most complex ideas. And that's where a lot of those ICOs really were able to gain market share. But ultimately, it seems as if the market, both the supply side and the demand side, have settled around the idea that this current version of Ethereum is best suited for finance and programmable money.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about that a little bit, because, you know, you lived through the DAO, which, for those of you that weren't around in 2015, the DAO is actually the reason Ethereum Classic exists, because so much money, I might tell this story wrong because I was actually not paying attention when this happened, but so much money was lost in a hack that occurred on the DAO, which is a decentralized, what does DAO stand for again? Decentralized autonomous organization. So it's like a decentralized company, right? And so much money was lost that Vitalik, the head of Ethereum, the guy that everybody looks to, decided we need to fork the chain and give everybody their money back that lost money. And that's what became ETH. And then ETH Classic, or ETC, spawned as the chain that the hack still existed on, which was just like, I think at that point in time for crypto, it was kind of a first, at least on that scale. And it was also, I think, really powerful, because it goes to show that even if a quote unquote irreversible hack occurs, it could be undone if the majority believe that it should be undone, which is what happened. Like, even though, you know, Vitalik led it or decided to do that, the miners still chose Ethereum. The people chose Ethereum, because why would you choose to have your money stolen?
It's also important to look at the roadmap they set out. And since day one, before even having a testnet, they were going to do hard forks. So I think it was a little bit easier for the community to swallow, because they were already expecting this massive development phase and massive changes and overcoming unknowns of unknowns, where that's just not something you see in a more established community like Bitcoin.
So let's talk about that too, because Ethereum's roadmap right now is pretty powerful. I think, at least for me, one of the reasons I'm so bullish on Ethereum, especially over the next 12 to 24 months outside of DeFi, is the current roadmap and the phase 2.0 implementation and the scaling solutions. So I know I've been doing more than enough talking so far, so I want to give you the opportunity to show off your knowledge of Ethereum 2.0.
As we discussed, the Ethereum network right now is basically maxed out its capacity. We're seeing all-time gas usage, which is a massive signal towards both the Ethereum Foundation, who typically kind of leads the direction of Ethereum, and also all of the layer two solutions, which essentially extend the current version of Ethereum. So we've seen a lot of activity on Twitter of people kind of trying to speed things up. The way that these layer two solutions work is essentially offloading a bunch of the work to a side chain, and then they stamp in the outcome to the main chain, kind of like Lightning. And so one of them that seems to be getting traction is Optimistic Rollups. And we're seeing that being tested on Uniswap and Synthetics and a couple of these other protocols. So I'm hopeful that those initiatives can come to market faster, and that way we don't have to rely so much on Ethereum 2.0, because Ethereum 2.0 is a very big change. And there's so many things that can go wrong. And
it's pretty far away.
Yeah. What is the latest phase zero? Is kind of the first implementation of a mainnet.
Yeah, it's supposed to be happening in October. actually might even be put off till November.
Yeah, I feel like we could be a year to 2 years out from having any type of end user experience on Ethereum 2.
Now, that being said, though, when Ethereum 2.0 does come out, if you owned 32 Ethereum, which I mean, by the time it comes out, it's probably like $32,000 or more. But if you have that much Ethereum, and probably they'll have like community nodes, but you can stake a node. So Ethereum will become a proof of stake blockchain, which basically means you just stake coins in your wallet or on your computer or on your phone. And you're actually going to make 14% the first year that that comes out, which is just, that's going to be insane. So I'm really actually excited for that update when and if it does roll out that way. But I totally agree. I think layer two and rollups, like we're talking about, I think Vitalik said it, it's like rollups alone will increase the throughput of the chain by like 100-fold. And so then at the base layer, implementing something like staking, all of a sudden you get this insane throughput on Ethereum where people can start transacting for pennies rather than, you know, tens of dollars. So I think, like you said, we're probably a year, 2 years away from that. But nonetheless, it's coming, which is just incredible.
Yeah, and I think there's plenty of solutions that can help bridge that gap. For example, Tether just came out and said that they're piloting using the OMG network, which is a Plasma implementation similar to what I was talking about earlier. And that alone, yeah. Tether is the most transacted ERC-20 token on the network. So that alone can provide a ton of value. And then we also have all of these vaults and protocols that are essentially aggregating user funds and batching.
Yeah, exactly.
They're batching transactions. So we're basically scaling Ethereum from the bottom up.
Yep. I think that's the most bullish case, is it's the more that we kind of automate finance. Like when I look at Ethereum and you know, you get CurveFi and all these, the ability for you to earn yield, the more that we kind of automate those things and abstract them away. So, you know, you can sign up for this smart contract and they do everything for you, or you put your money in this app like Tantra Labs and they do everything for you. What happens is that you go to someone, and I'll use us as an example. Now, actually, I'm not going to use us as an example. I'll use Uniswap as an example, or even CurveFi as an example, because they have so much money in this pool, right? So let's call it $100 million. They don't care about paying $100 to do a transaction on Ethereum. Actually, when you move $100 million, to pay $100 transaction fee is a steal. So, and that's all happening because of the users batching themselves into a single contract. And I totally think, like, the more that that happens and the more it gets abstracted away, like I think Uniswap was probably the greatest thing to happen to Ethereum, and it needed it because of all the ERC-20 tokens. But Ethereum is such an innovator in this decentralized financial space. And I think the one most important thing for anyone to think about is, like, everything we do in crypto is decentralized finance. Bitcoin is decentralized finance. ETH is, whatever. Tron is decentralized finance. And so I think we've always at Tantra, we viewed Ethereum as the first place where we're going to get serious retail adoption is probably going to be Ethereum, because the ability for someone to go download an app from the App Store, put money straight from their bank account onto a stable coin, and then earn more dollars without ever seeing Ethereum. That's powerful. That is the future of crypto. And that is because I think about it like this, like how many people listening to this right now understand what HTTP is or HTTPS, or like how many people in your family understand what HTTP/www.whatever website you're going to, what that means. No one. But in the first days of the internet, you had to understand the hypertransport protocol. And so that's Ethereum today. That's Bitcoin today. Like, we are building the hypertransport protocol for the financial layer of the internet that your grandma is going to go sign up for the Dharma app or the Tantra Labs app, earn 12% more ETH or dollars or whatever she wants to earn, and never have to know what a MetaMask wallet is, what an ETH gas price is, what a Wei is. She just knows I'm making, 12% more. I'm making 8% more. And this app has pretty colors.
So what you're saying is I should be taking advantage of the dip today.
Ethereum. I'm basically saying if you're not buying ETH or Bitcoin right now, you're missing out.
Well, I think
it's not financial.
I think a lot of people would want to know, how is that interest being earned? Because ultimately, if it's not done through productive ways, then it's likely to not last, and it may be a scam. So can you explain to people how the yield is even earned when these people are lending out their crypto dollars or their Ethereum?
Right. On specifically just like Ethereum, if you were to go to like Wi-Fi or any of these contracts right now?
I would like people to understand that the way that they're earning interest is the way that a bank earns interest.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Sure. I mean, ultimately, and I think we've talked about this before with Bitcoin, and like, especially before Ethereum came along, I always thought that the kind of things happening on Ethereum would be happening on Bitcoin. And I think that they will in the future with Lightning and Liquid, but they're not happening yet. And the idea is like, you really do replace the bank. You don't need Bank of America anymore. You can loan money from, Joe Schmo on the other side of the world for the same interest rate, actually better interest rate than your bank would give you, by collateralizing that loan, making payments on it, proving something. So right now, I think all crypto loans are collateralized and over collateralized. So you have to post some amount of money to borrow money, which keeps the system from imploding and actually is a huge step in the right direction versus the current world where they literally lend out money that doesn't exist. And so right now what happens is you can go to a decentralized protocol, you put up however much money, let's call it $1,000. And the idea is that you could put up, let's say you have $1,000 worth of Ethereum, but you need to pay your car payment this month and you don't want to sell Ethereum. So instead of selling Ethereum, you would go to a decentralized lending protocol like Compound Finance or Aave, or even I think Curve offers this now, and you would just go there and say, hey, will somebody, talking to the smart contract, loan me $500 against this $1,000 worth of Ethereum? And of course, someone out there, I think there's a couple billion dollars locked up in these things nowadays, somebody out there is going to say, sure, I'll loan it to you at 10% interest. And so now you just paid your car payment, you didn't have to sell Ethereum, and someone else is earning 10% interest on their, US dollars by holding your ETH for you.
Oh, and they're guaranteed to get paid back. So the bank doesn't have those types of guarantees necessarily.
Yep. Actually, and I think a lot of people on Twitter attack Ethereum for being over leveraged and almost fight it. Like, the point of decentralized finance or Bitcoin is to have hard money. But I think even to force collateralization on loans is a better step in the right direction than what the banks are doing today. So I've kind of always viewed Ethereum as a stepping stone. It's like, you give people products that they already know and understand, like CDPs, collateralized debt products, and you put them in smart money that's easy to do, and you cut out the middleman, and you build a better world for it. I mean, why try to like force an entirely new paradigm when you could trick people into thinking that Ethereum is the future of money and then make a bunch of money, steal it from the banks, and buy Bitcoin with it?
On that note, let's set the record straight here regarding leverage and using debt to build wealth. Every single wealthy person today is sitting on the most levered asset that you can own, and that's a house.
Yep.
Millennials can't buy houses because they're too expensive. So why shouldn't a younger person with exposure to a digital asset be able to take out a loan just like a house or a mortgage and essentially apply leverage to their investments or to their life? That is how everyone builds wealth. And so to me, when I see Ethereum and DeFi, like, we're democratizing that ability to take on leverage to down to the pennies, to the dollars. And that's something that was never accessible and will never be accessible for young people today trying to buy homes, especially in urban and metropolitan areas.
Exactly. I love the idea of it because it truly is like, you use the right word, you democratize it. Like, now anyone has access to leverage. I think a lot of like what the laws in the United States, like the SEC and certain like organizations like FINRA, try to keep people from accessing stocks for their own good. Like, they basically try to, like, you have to be over the age of 18. You need to have a certain amount of money in your account. All these roadblocks to keep people from having access to what they would consider a risky investment, because it is risky. If you put $1,000 of Ethereum and borrow $500 against it, that is a risky thing to do. Now, whether you understand that or not, that's up to you. You need to do that due diligence and either take that risk and get like bite the bullet or understand it. But no one should tell you that you can't. If you want to gamble your life savings away, no four-letter organization should stop you. That's your problem. And I don't think that the SEC and FINRA have ever helped someone not do that, because those kinds of people will just find another way to do it through sports gambling or buying Ethereum on leverage. No, I'm just kidding. But ultimately, like, the entire movement is just built around democratizing everything about finance, so that anyone who wants to participate in the ecosystem can do it, and can do it in a way that's been proven to work. Like, it's not like we're reinventing the wheel on Ethereum with CDPs and leverage. These are things that we've been doing in the financial markets for probably a century at this point. And it's made a lot of people a lot of money. So I think it's about time it makes a lot of young people a lot of money. And it is. There's a ton of people getting rich off of imaginary internet money right now. Like, I think the one thing that people, like, I keep hearing it over and over again, and for me, it makes so much sense. This is a Ponzi scheme. Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme. Ethereum is a Ponzi scheme. The US dollar is a Ponzi scheme. You have to realize that you are playing a game, and that the US dollar is a game rigged against you that you have no control over. So why not play a game where you can see the rules, understand the rules for yourself, and take advantage of those rules? That's what Ethereum is. That's what Bitcoin is. That's what based money and sushi token and like all this, like Dogecoin, like every meme that's ever happened in crypto, that's what they are. It's literally making fun of money, because at the end of the day, money is made up. It's just an idea. And if we all agree it's worth something, we can make it worth something. That's the beauty and the power of the internet. And, you know, to use the maximalist terminology, actually, I don't know any maximalist terminology. I love me some toxic maximalism. I think they keep us DeFi degenerates in check. But ultimately, I think that this entire ecosystem is about proving that money is a false concept that we've created. And therefore, we should be able to create it out of thin air and make everybody rich. I say we hyperinflate the world. And that's my TED Talk. Thank you for coming. Did I go off on a tangent, Kagan? Should I have not done that? Kagan? Are you there? Did you mute? Oh, yeah, I think you
muted. Oh, wait, I'm muted. Wait, what is that music?
There's a dramatic piano button.
Where?
Oh, it might be I'm the leader of the meeting, so I have it.
Oh, my gosh, it's so funny. I was cracking up.
Yeah, you muted yourself. Sorry.
No, yeah, you did good. I don't know what hyperinflate the world means, but we'll use it.
I made it up. The main thing that we want to do at Tantra is give people the ability to be denominated how they want. And right now, we started with Bitcoin, and our main thing 2 years ago was like, we think the world is going to be Bitcoin denominated at some point. So the people that are forward thinking, we want to give them the ability to denominate in Bitcoin. And as the market evolved and Ethereum evolved, market interest in Ethereum evolved, we realized, you know, people will also want to be denominated in ETH. And so based on that, and also based on the fact that there are markets where we can be denominated in ETH and trade in ETH that allow us to earn interest for whatever counterparties want to loan us their Ethereum, we are comfortable offering 12% interest by allocating your Ethereum into our portfolio of algorithmic strategies that can actually earn you more Ethereum. We're really excited to be able to launch this for everybody. We've been experimenting and using Ethereum in this portfolio with our own money for over, I think, 12 months at this point. And this latest version of our portfolio we've been running for about 6 months. We are super stoked. And actually, I think this is, even though this podcast is about ETH and we should do another podcast about it, this is a great time to mention we just upgraded our portfolio to basically what we're calling our 2.0. And we basically moved our system from Python to Golang. It's thousands of times faster, and we're able to deploy, you know, multitudes of different strategies into our portfolio, which gives us a much leaner risk reward curve, which we hope that it gets us to a place where we're able to offer even better rewards for our clients. And so we're talking a lot of, I think we've talked with you guys about this before and mentioned it, like the reason that we offer 12% is because we wanted to democratize hedge fund like returns, but operating inside of the United States legal system, we haven't been able to really accomplish that goal as well as we'd like. So taking on loans was one way that we could offer our returns to the public. Right now, we're looking at how we can even better share the upside with you guys. So we'll keep you posted on that. So Kagan, right now, what are you the most excited about with Ethereum? And like, are there any hot projects that you're watching that you think are going to blow up? Give me the insights.
I've got two. I think governance is very interesting because there's so many attack vectors that Bitcoiners have been arguing over since the beginning of crypto. And we're kind of getting to watch that play out now. And when I say attack vectors, I mean people using decentralized governance and taking it over in a malicious way and somehow essentially stealing funds. And so that's going to be really interesting to watch. And I think we're at ground zero for what's possible. And so one of the companies that has been at the forefront since 2017 is Aragon. So I'm excited to see how they get integrated into these different projects. And then I'm also really excited about that optimistic rollup layer two. And they've got demos. I would love.
And that's OMG network, yeah? Or is that just on Ethereum?
That's a good question. It's not OMG network. OMG network is different. But these are layer twos that they connect to Ethereum. So if you are
a swap protocol like Uniswap, then you can essentially offload your users onto that solution. So,
got it. So it's more just like bullish Ethereum.
Yeah, you could say that.
Gotta give me the token that I need to mortgage my house.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's what I want. That's what I want. Should I be based?
I don't know enough about based. I'm very interested in learning more. I'm happy. I think everyone should be open to making asymmetric bets. If you can risk 1% and earn 10,000%, that's a good bet.
100% agree. Aren't you interested to know what my asymmetric bets are? I have some.
Let's hear. What is your favorite thing that you're watching on Ethereum? And what should we be checking back?
Anything Uniswap. Right now, the biggest thing happening in Ethereum, in my opinion, is Uniswap and all of the forks. So a bunch of people are copying their code, making a community-driven version. You know, you earn a part of the stake. We just saw it with SushiSwap. I think that Uniswap is the future because to a normal person, nobody wants to place a limit order for shares. Nobody wants to place a market order. Nobody wants to understand, oh, it's this much money, it's that much money. Oh, I have this money, I have that many, it's worth this much. Like, I'm sorry, normal people do not care. And the likelihood of you getting them to care is pretty slim. But if they can go in an app and click a button and now they own something or they don't own something, I think that's the future. And I think that Uniswap's volume has shown that. So any ability to own a share of the future of exchanging digital assets, I'm all in. All in.
Yeah, I completely plus agree. Leverage.
It's not financial advice.
And that kind of speaks to another thing that's so interesting about the space. One of my family members works at AWS, and she is very adamant about reminding me about Amazon's principles of doing business. And the main one is treating the customer right, and the customer basically rules all business decisions. And we're kind of seeing that play out live right now with this open source tech, like you just said. We've got the community forking, which essentially is replicating something that's already been done. Because guys, remember, this stuff is published there out in the open. Anyone can take it.
Yep. Anybody can take it. Anybody can read it. Anybody can prove that it's good or bad.
And then they're tweaking it just subtly to make it that much better for the end user. And so you kind of create this positive loop where I feel like any value that can go to the consumer or the customer or the end user, it will eventually land on that side of the playing field. Because you have this open source, permissionless game theory that's taking place where it's just all about who can do the best. And I don't think we've seen even the tip of the iceberg of how people are going to take advantage of those attributes.
Totally agree. I think we're to actually asterisk what you're saying, I think we're starting to see the tip of the iceberg. Like I think it's almost like we're watching it surface right now. And a lot of what we talk about, and I think the biggest bull case for Ethereum is DeFi. And if you look at DeFi and you look at, there's $6 billion, let's call it, in value locked up in DeFi right now. That is nothing. That is absolutely tiny when we look at how much money is circulating in the world, especially when you get into leveraged assets. And so if Ethereum really truly builds a Ponzi scheme that everyone can participate in and the rules are known to everyone, then I think you see 6 billion turn into 6 trillion in the next decade, no problem. And that's where the real value creation is going to come in. That's where everyone's grandma is making 12% on their money, because that's what the bank's making right now anyways. So why shouldn't you? Why should Bank of America's CEO own 7 yachts and a few jet planes, and you make 0.2% interest when Bank of America is making 27% interest, or whatever the hell they charge me every month on my debts?
When you say that, it brings me back to that phrase where in Ethereum and in crypto, we want to be your own bank, essentially. Yep. And it's not necessarily that you have a place to store your money. That's not the banking service we're talking about. It's actually that you are now providing banking-like services to the world, like you just said, Exactly. Just as that CEO is doing. And yep. So I think using the word Ponzi is a – I'm going to asterisk you now, by the way. Using the word Ponzi in the Ethereum world is a little bit disingenuous, I think, because of the utility that people are getting out of it, because of the services.
I do it for the shock factor, just to be like – to really realize that all money in essence is a Ponzi scheme. So just accept that and stop trying to like, this one's better than this one. It's just about utility.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I love the asterisk.
All right, people. So in conclusion, asymmetric BEX are good. Ethereum has a great potential upside.
Yep.
Relative to its utility.
Yep.
Long Bitcoin, long Ethereum.
Yeah, I think one like huge point there too, and I think this came up briefly, it's like you can be long both. And I think the whole purpose is like, some people say like, well, all this can be done on Bitcoin. I hope so. I hope everything we do on Ethereum, they do it on Bitcoin. And I hope just like Uber and Lyft exist, just like Walmart and Amazon and Kmart and you want multiple organizations because they're going to push each other forward. The same way you want multiple blockchains because they're going to push each other forward. And we're going to get the utility as a civilization that we want and need because people are going to build it. That's why DeFi is being created, because people want it. People are going to use it. And you can't fight that. You can't say like, oh, this is bullshit when billions of dollars are using it. No, like this is what – give the people what they want, and it's clear that they want Ethereums. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
I have just more comments. This is too exciting.
I know. I love it.
When we're talking about this, it makes me think – because we're talking about competition and capitalism and the ability to create – who can create the best service. And yep. – I was thinking of how currently we have these monopolies in the United States that they're doing a really good job. I mean, Amazon is amazing. And, but what would happen if the type of competition that we're seeing in Ethereum happens in these other types of industries? And I'm not saying it needs to be on a blockchain or anything, but the reason this stuff is happening so fast is because you don't need any permission. And you don't need any resources. You don't need much infrastructure. And so once I think Amazon is putting in the hard yards, right? Like the infrastructure doesn't exist to innovate on top of for the everyday man or the everyday software engineer. But someday it may. And I don't think we can really even imagine the types of innovation that we're going to see in that environment.
Well, it's so funny that came up because I was thinking about that earlier. It's like the difference is the digital world and the physical world. Like it's just so much easier to build a product in the digital world than it is in the physical world, which is where a lot of innovation happens for Amazon and Walmart as the examples. Like a lot of their innovation came in the physical world, right? Like perfecting shipping routes and warehouse management. And those are different problems than what's being solved in this ecosystem right now. But that's not to say that maybe one day those problems won't be solvable by an open source solution.
Mm-hmm. Agree. It's almost as if, because my brother runs an Amazon business, and Amazon has done everything they can to make selling physical products digital. I mean, yeah. It never touches your hands. Yeah. It goes straight from the manufacturer in China to Amazon to the customer. So it's almost if you kind of zoom out a little bit, they kind of made it digital.
Yeah, they did. That's a great point, actually. It'll be interesting to see what else gets digitized, because I think something that's so interesting about Ethereum, right? We saw in 2017, the ICO craze was Bitcoin 2.0. That was ICOs. This is Bitcoin 2.0. This is decentralized bullshit 2.0. And most of them failed. And a lot of them are still around and doing really cool things. But now I think what we're seeing come out of the ashes were the projects that were legitimate in that ICO craze that built really great stuff like Compound and 0x and Lend, and all those projects were in that ICO phase and died in that ICO phase. But now, because they built real digital utility, they took a physical product, money, and turned, like, a CDP is a physical product because the bank has an accountant who was typing in bullshit for so long, and then the bank digitized it, but they didn't share that with anybody. But then some, 16-year-old kid in their mom's basement figured out the code that Bank of America uses to take people's money from them and said, hey, we can do this in a way that anybody can share in this economy and in this wealth system. And then they digitized it. And so now we're literally in the era of digitizing money. And it is so incredible because, like you mentioned, Amazon being physical, money is still physical. But why? Why is money physical? When you carry a cell phone around in your pocket all day, why would you hold cash? Like, there's literally no reason anymore outside of avoiding taxes or hiding from the government.
Well, why you said that, we tagged 10,000.
Did you see the Tron stuff that I linked? Tron is pumping.
Yeah, it's such a Ponzi.
Yeah, I mean,
we should trade it.
I know. That's the thing, man. It's all the one thing that I just keep coming back to, and the reason I keep using the word Ponzi is I really want to desensitize people to this fucked up imagery of what a Ponzi scheme is. Like, the whole idea is that you and I agree that something is worth it. We give it value. We give Bitcoin value. We give Ethereum value. We give the US dollar value. And if we can convince more people that something is worth something, it'll go up. Because ultimately, our job as innovators is to make it so that, yeah, you want to own Bitcoin. Because,
oof, 9K.
No way. Oh, that's a strong one there. Oh, wow. We're mega short. Let's go. I think the one thing about this podcast is we don't want to offend Bitcoin maximalism, but also we don't want to side with it. And ultimately, as a company, we're agnostic. And this is our view on Ethereum based on our experience with Ethereum and just our experience in the whole cryptocurrency economy in general. I think every single project has merit to it for the most part. A lot of these guys are just trying to change the world. And so if the reasoning behind it is powerful, and I think Ethereum's is, and I think a lot of the projects on Ethereum are, then we're 100% going to look into it and invest in it and hopefully offer, the ability for our customers and investors to be a part of it.
I agree.
Thank you everybody for listening. If you made it this far, I'm very proud of you. We're excited to move forward into the future of finance with everybody. And I hope that you guys were able to learn something or take away some kind of insight, and please share any opinions with us. If you have any comments or questions or advice, we're more than open and willing to hear you out. You can reach us on Twitter, or Kagan likes to stay active in intercom. So if you go on our website, you can ping him at any time. He actually doesn't sleep anymore. He just responds to intercom messages all day. So please hit us up, talk to us, and come sign up for the beta. Hopefully we'll be launching to the world soon outside of the US, and you'll be able to earn 12% on Bitcoin and 12% on Ethereum. We're really excited, and thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, consider leaving us a positive review, and sharing us with your friends. Previously only open to accredited investors, Tantra Labs will soon be open to the public, offering 12% interest on your Bitcoin. That's higher than our competitors and much higher than your bank. To learn more, visit tantralabs.io. Thanks for listening.